Blog Talk Radio.
Behind the blue
morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mace. Got Izzy in the house. Come in here at the last minute. All right. Good morning. First off, to everybody, we got a special show today. Got a special guest today. We got two doctors in the house. I just got done saying that, but most people say, is there a doctor in the house? We got two in the house today. And we're going to touch on a real hot button topic that nobody seems to really want to get to, which is for Dr. Dolphin and Dr. Corsi, Dr. Behavior. It's right up in your house. Travis brings a world of experience, and so does John. So I'm going to be sidelined for a lot of this conversation because this is real talk. And before we get to the guests, the co-hosts introducing themselves, you know, if you know someone who's incarcerated or has just gotten out, or is about to enter into incarceration, this is a show for them. Share it to them. Give them the links to where they can come see it. If you guys want to call in and comment, 646-716-4621, press 1. And so I know that you want to speak, and we'll bring you on. But before we go any further into this, I got to say good morning to all the co-host that popped in here, Big Izzy, searching around. Izzy said, where I put that at? Down there at the bottom.
Morning, everybody.
Yeah.
Glad to be here, getting ready to talk. Hope everybody had a good week.
It's all good. Let's go up to Big John. What's up, Big John?
Hey, man. Good morning. Looking forward to chopping it up with my man, Kevy Cap, Waterbed Cap, and we're going to do our thing.
All right, Dr. Behavior, Dr. Corsi Cruz, how was your week?
My week was amazing. I was a little bit of a hermit with everybody getting sick, so I've kind of been ducking and dodging as much as I can, but it's been a good week. It was wonderful. How was y'all?
It was all good here. You know, another in ATL, you know, warm one day, cold the next, just like Texas, just not as extreme. Big Joe, what's going on, brother?
Oh, everything's good, man. Shit. I'm having me a lot.
Starfleet Commander. And I'm going to say up front, you know, to people who will listen to this show, you know, this is not your grandfather's radio show here. You know, we talk about real problems, real solutions, and sometimes with the co-host, and particularly with myself and Joe, you'll hear passion come out. And sometimes that passion may come out in the form of expletives, agitated adjectives, better known as curse words. You know, there's some, we do have ground rules. We don't use the Lord's name in vain. You know, we're not going to use the N-word unless it's in the context of a quote. The B-word, the C-word are off limits. We don't do that here. You know, so when you hear it's not curse fest up here. This is emotion and passion and everybody you see on the screen right now, these people aren't paid to be here every Saturday. They're here because they care, and they put the legwork in. So on here, you know, people are free to say what they want to say, including the callers that are calling. They're free to express themselves, you know. Everybody's opinion is welcome. This is not a Black Lives Matter channel. It's not an anti-police show. It's not a Christian platform, a Muslim platform, or right or left. Here, we just get to what is. And that's just the way it is. If you disagree, feel free to call in, and we'll allow you to express yourself. Go down to one of our guests filled in today, guest co-host from The Point, Mr. Travis Evans. What's up, Travis?
What's going on? Good morning. Top of the morning, top of the weekend, whatever.
Let's get this show started. I love talking about prisons and reform.
All right, brother, because you bring a wealth of experience there that we want to make sure we get in there. And I want to go up now to our guests. And we share a lot in common. We go back a long way. And I love when I can go back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I can pull these brothers out. We've had OG Cal Holman on. Dr. Kev, you know OG. You know, yeah. I mean, people that just bring it real, 100. This is just it. And this week when I was going through all my messages and all this stuff, and you were on my mind already, then I saw this message from you. And I called you up and I said, hey, brother, I want to do a show on, you know, not prison reform so much as how do we transition people in, which is right in your wheelhouse. And you didn't feed me BS. You didn't give me the long run around. You didn't, well, let me get with my agent. Let me call you. You didn't do me that way. You say, yeah, I'm there. So come on now, brother. You got the floor. Introduce yourself. Let everybody know who you are.
So that's me, right, Brother Stan?
That's you.
Yes, sir. Okay. My name is Dr. Kevin Dolphin. I'm from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm the founder of Breaking the Chains, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit organization that assists at-risk youth re-entrance. We do a lot of different, I'll get into that later, we do a lot of different things for people in the community. But our main thing and our foundation was built off of prison reform and re-entry. So Dr. Kevin Dolphin.
All right, brother. Now let me. I guess I'll stir the pot. You know, my biggest problem with the prison system today, as we know it, as we see it, as we think about it, and Dr. Corsi, this is going to go straight into kind of your wheelhouse. I understand. We want to reform these people. Rehabilitation is the word they like to use. But then on the flip side of it, we see more punishment than rehabilitation. Now, I agree these people should atone. And I'm not talking about your violent murderers and all these. I'm talking about your average person that goes in, whether it's a city jail, a county jail, state jail, or the federal fence. So let's be clear. We're including all of them in here. So we're not going to let the cities and counties sneak out the back door on this. So, Dr. Cruz, from your perspective, when we talk about the prison system, what is it meant to do, and what does it do from your professional perspective? What do you see?
So the purpose has changed over the years, or the stated purpose has supposedly changed over the years. we've had different models that we've tried to take on from medical and rehabilitative sort of a stance to this pendulum swing, right? We never can quite get it in the middle. We always fly one way, the other. Corrections and in criminal justice system for a long time, and I've heard it stated a lot of different ways what it's supposed to do. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the good stuff. I've seen a lot of the bad stuff. I've seen a lot of punishment. I've seen a lot of making us feel better. We want to hear the sentence somebody gets, so we decide if we think it was harsh enough or whatever it was that the statement said. We hear a lot of, it's a lot of outside stuff. I'm going to let the people who are working in it consistently talk more on it. From my perspective, it's broken, and it's been broken, and it's never fixed, and there's a lot that we could unpack on.
Okay, let me go down real quick to Travis, because Travis, you actually worked in the prison system here in Georgia for, I believe, 12 years. What was your experience working in there? The pros and the cons. What worked, what didn't work? What do you think?
Well, personally, I don't think any of it worked. I mean, it's just a matter of opinion, so please, before you guys start jumping, understand, I was in, and I've seen people come back, actually get out, shake their hand, pray with them, tell them, hey, man, just don't come back, do the right thing, do this, and 2-3 months later, they're on their way back because they violated parole. I mean, it's becoming such a good place for these guys to live or to be that they can't help it. They're institutionalized to the point where they just they'll turn around and come back. I mean, is it working? Is it creating some type of diversion from a criminal life? And can you define what a criminal life is? And is the criminal justice system fair? Those are the things that kind of sort of just made me say, you know what, I don't want to do this no more. I don't want to deal with it. Because it seemed like it was just that revolving door that went around, they go out, they come right back in, and we go through the same thing. With all the parameters that they have out there to deterrence, there's programs, and not the doctor's program he has. A lot of these programs, they don't work. And I hope he has the key or the ingredients to actually make it work this time. Because it just really, from what I can see, it does not work in certain areas, it just doesn't work. And it's very frustrating to keep watching this go on and on and on. And now we have a younger generation of young men and women who really and truly just don't care. They don't care. You can tell them today, or you'll go to prison. So I don't give a F. I don't care about going to prison. They don't even care if they live or die. So it seems to me like the crime and punishment thing has lost its way somewhere way back in the day. And I did a little bit of research, and I'll talk about that later. I don't want to take up the show. But I did a little bit of research on what changed prisons from becoming the hardcore prisons back in the day when Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence did life, and what went from that prison system to the prison system that we have today, what changed it. And it was just remarkable. Some of the inmates that actually earned their degrees in prison and went to fight for legislature to make life, prison life, a little bit better for inmates.
Well,
maybe that's the reason.
Well, we got one of them right here, Big John. Come on,
yes.
Big John. Talk to us, brother.
Wow. This is going to be a great topic. And I want to start off by saying that there's several factors, Travis, that goes into a person's rehabilitation. One, as Kev would acknowledge, is that you have to get to a point in your life where you say, I want to change. And you make yourself available to all the programs that they have and they don't have. By that, I mean there's other organizations on the outside that's like Kev's organization is now, where you can reach out to. When I was in there, I didn't buy XXL magazines. I didn't buy Whips and Dubs. I bought Black Entrepreneur, Black Enterprise. I bought self-help books for myself, for my own rehabilitation. Now, the second part of this is for Dr. Corsi, is that when you were locked up, you go through, for me, during a long stay, an emotional shutdown. I shut down emotionally because I didn't want to be hurt while I was incarcerated. And the one thing that I thought I could do was hit the switch once I knew I made parole and it's going to come home and I'll be able to be loving, caring. It doesn't happen. I shut down so long, I became such an ice cold person, like even my family's like, yo, and I think I said on the show numerous times that my dogs were therapeutic for me. And it was through me getting a dog, my first dog, that I began to learn how to love and care again because I had something to care for. My children were grown. I missed everything. There's a lot of factors. You need to, one, have outside support. It don't necessarily have to be family, or friends. You could have an organization like Kev who's working with the guys before they get out. Now, and I'm going to shut up on this last note, that most of the guys that I've seen that kept coming back never changed their behavior while they was incarcerated. They was in there, whether they was trying to sneak drugs in, they was making puno. For those who don't know what puno is, that's inmates liquor. But they was engaged in even down to selling coffee balls, candy balls, and I would look at the behavior. Only thing you did was substitute the drugs with cookie balls and candy balls, and you had to bag up, go out in the day room mentality like you were still on the block. So how can you get to the streets and think that your behavior is going to be a changed behavior when you didn't change the behavior, you only changed the product? And this is one of the major problems. So it comes down to a person has to make a decision in his life and say, I want more for myself. And it didn't help to have correctional guards saying to inmates as they exit, you'll be back.
You know, John, let me, before we go to Dr. Dolphin to answer this, because I want both of y'all to dialogue on this one point. When I heard Travis say, you know, a lot of these programs are not successful, and it's hard to disagree with that, but I do have to ask that how much of this capitalist system that we now have in place, that is for-profit prisons or the Department of Corrections at whatever level you want to put it. So when someone like Dr. Dolphin comes in with a program that's designed to defeat recidivism, it's counterproductive to those who are making money off of the very system. So then how is he going to get voted on when he puts in his proposal at bid time? See, that's the thing that's in between. And we all talk about for-profit prisons, and we all know GEO Corp and several other ones that are the leading ones in the country. But when we talk about the failures of these programs, how much of the failures are the program, and how much of the failures are the program's potential success that's going to mitigate the recidivism, cut the numbers? It goes back to policing. Why don't you have community policing? Well, you don't have it because you arrest less people. You arrest less people. There's money in crime for those who are invested in it. So, Dr. Dolphin, you're putting together your program, you're trying to give back. How much of what I just said is true? Did you see? Did you suspect? Or did you not see?
Well, first, you touched on it. You really touched on it, and it's really profound what you just said, because some people don't want to see certain things work because it's like you said, they're benefiting off of it. But I'm going to say this because I always, you know, I like to look at the spectrum from, I like to look through a clear spectrum, but I like to look from every side, not just from my side. With the prison system, we understand whether it's county, state, federal, whatever. Some prisons do have programs. They do have good programs for individuals to participate in. And some don't. It's like you can be at this program here, but get transferred to another program, and then they don't have what they had at this institution. So now you're like lost and trying to find your way, what you need to do. That's for some individuals. But it's up to the individual whether they want to change, because no one can stop the individual, and you guys know this through your trials and tribulations, through life. It doesn't even have to be prison, but through things that you wanted out of life. When you want something bad enough, you go after it. So these are the things that I understand, because I don't want to jump too far ahead of myself, but I several months ago, no, maybe almost a year ago, I wrote a book called If These Prison Walls Could Talk. If these, just think about this, that question. If these prison walls could talk, what would they say? This is an astounding, eye-opening account of what the prison system looks like from both sides. It's legislators in here. We have prison guards that I did interviews with in here. We have, I don't like to call the guys inmates, but we have inmates in here that has done stories. We have statistics. This is a very eye-opening account, and not only individuals that have people that may be in prison, family members, friends, but people that don't, so that you can understand and learn what the system does. And it's always you know, it's always a flip side to every story. But if these prison walls could talk, by Dr. Kevin Dolphin is, and I'm not saying it because I wrote it, but it's an astounding piece of work. And it helps individuals change their mindset when it comes to the way that they view the prison system.
Now, Dr. Dolphin, let me check everybody right now that's going to be listening to this, because you're putting out a lot of good information. And it's easy for somebody to jump in here and go, well, he's a doctor, he don't know. He's been rich his whole life, or he probably went to Harvard, and he's talking about jail. He don't even know what he's talking about. You want to share a little bit of where your experience came from?
Okay, well, now I don't want to take up too much time. Okay.
It's all right. It's your show, brother. Go ahead.
I'm from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I grew up in one of the roughest neighborhoods in the city, which most people call the trap house today. Us back in the day, we called it the speakeasy and all that. I grew up in the speakeasy. And I grew up around the pimps, the drug pushers, the murderers. I grew up around these people because my mother and my father, they were heavily involved in criminal activities. So when I was 4 years old, my father got murdered. He mysteriously got murdered, and they tried to blame it on my mother. It was actually said that the police had something to do with it, but we don't know. We never found out. And so as I'm growing up as a child, you know, as a child, you can tell, as an adult, you can tell a child to do as I say, not what you see, but it doesn't work that way. So I grew up watching and seeing all of these things, and I began to emulate these things. And we didn't know about being traumatized and everything like that back then. We didn't even know what traumatization was or whatever. But so I began to emulate these individuals and growing up. So by the time I was maybe 10, I may have seen like 6 or 7 murders. So I didn't understand it, that it was making me numb to a lot of the things that goes on in life. A normal person or a normal child doesn't grow up like that. So as I'm growing up and I'm continuing to see these things, because after my father was murdered, my mother took on the head of the drug trade. She was at that time, 70s, early 80s, the biggest drug dealer in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So eventually my mother went to prison. So she went to prison prior to things like I was like the age of 11 or 12. And I began to indulge in the things that, you know, I had saw. So by the time I was like 15, 16 years old, I was the biggest drug dealer in Harrisburg. So in the late to mid 80s, I was labeled public enemy number one by the Harrisburg Police Department. And it wasn't that nice. So I was taking my show on the road. I've been locked up in New York, Rikers Island. I've been upstate, Fishkill, New York. I've been in the federal penitentiary. I did 15 years in the feds. I've been locked up in New Jersey, you name it. And it's sad, because it's just like someone said earlier, the young people, they don't care. And I'm not going to say that I didn't care. I didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
Because let me say this, if you were never taught how to do better, then how are you going to do better? And then it comes with your level of understanding. Even if you give me something, do I know how and understand how to use it? At that time, I may not know. So then it may come with nurturing and caring this seed that I planted inside of you. So with me, I'm jumping ahead and I'm going to skip around. I stood in front of a judge, and the judge told me, he said, because you knew better and because you did all of these things during the course of your life and you were a menace to this society and everything, I have no choice but to give you this because you knew better. So I'm standing there. And he didn't want to hear anything that I had to say. If anyone knows, before you get sentenced, they usually ask you what you want to say, if you have any remarks or whatever. He didn't want to hear what I had to say, and actually didn't know better. Yeah, I knew that, you know, you get in trouble, you get wrong, but the abnormal way of life and the things that I had seen growing up and been involved in, it became normal to me. And that's like a lot of the individuals, young men and the young ladies out there today, that the way of life become normalized. So when you see it, you're like, wow, is this really going on? But to us, looking at it from a different side of it, we see like this is crazy, but they're in the middle of it and they can't see it. So I'm 51 years old. I spent over 26 years of my life in prison. Like I said, I've been around a lot of places. I know a lot of guys. I've been taught by a lot of people that have been through some things, and they were trying to nurture me at a young age. So understanding it, that's why I was able to put this together. It took me 10 years to write this book, and because I was putting it together, and I wanted it to be crafted so well that anyone could pick this book up and understand what we're facing right now in America. So there, I'm in the reentry. I don't want to jump too much. I help men and women when they come home from prison. Me and my organization, Breaking the Chains, we help men and women when they come home because mentoring is a big part of the individual staying out of prison. You have to have the right mentoring system. But this is the thing right here. When we are faced with all of these different wars, because we all facing with this COVID, we facing the economy, we facing all these different things. So if an individual is allowed to make parole, or he or she is coming home from prison, what do they really have? Like Mr. John said, support. You have to have that right support system. So it's a lot that goes into this, and it's very complex. But I'm here to tell you, It can work, and it does work. Not just me. I think John is formerly incarcerated, and there's many more that if you put your mind to it and you educate yourself, there's nothing that you can't do. And that's what we stand on, is education. That's what our platform is built on, because you can only go as far as your knowledge takes you. That's as far as you can go.
Now, Dr. Corsi, he mentioned education. He mentioned life choices. You know, that's in your wheelhouse, Dr. Behavior. What do you think?
Oh, it's central to everything, right? It's that mentorship. It's that decision-making. As parents, in my parenting class, what I teach them is to teach your child how to have their thoughts, to teach the thoughts that they need to have when they're by themselves, right? That decision-making, problem-solving, what do I do next? We've already talked about the fact that our brains, when we're stressed, we flip our lids, we shut down, right? We don't have the capabilities to make good decisions. Well, when you're living in environments that are constantly stressed, what are the chances of that light all of a sudden flipping on? That's not what happens. We survive. We do the very best we can to survive. And so when I see people who have come out of incarceration and have transitioned back in, I want to sit at their feet, because that transition has proved to be so difficult for so many people for so long that when somebody finally does do it, somebody asked earlier, you know, Stan, I think he said, you know, are they afraid of these programs? Are they going to, you know, lowball and not fund them? You know, I can't say that they won't do that, but I'll say that they're probably thinking this ain't going to work either. They're banking on the fact that these programs haven't worked and that people haven't made the choices and the decisions. Mentorship is huge for that, because when you're lost and you don't know, but you have someone you can trust that isn't stressed like you, that has seen something more than what you have and can tell you, definitely go left. Don't you dare go right. Mm-hmm. I'm going left, right? People will do, when they know better, they will do better. But when you put all of that weight on a person's shoulders who has never found success, and you say it's all on you, well, you know what? I'm going to go back to the game I know that I learned how to play and that I'm pretty good at. Because you know what? If I jerk left and juke right next time, then maybe, you know, I can stay out a little longer. And that's where their survival instinct will take them back to what they know. So if we really want to create a change, we've got to create a change in thinking. But in order to create a change in thinking, you've got to have a change in exposure. this is so multifaceted when we talk about that school to prison pipeline and all of the things that, you know, I'm so impassioned about. It comes back to the foundation of, do you believe there's better? Did you even know that there's better? And do you believe you can achieve it? That foundation of I can is so central to that's where growth mindset comes from, right? So it's the foundation for all of it is having somebody to guide you out. You know, it's kind of like being you're in the darkness, you're in the underworld, and you need somebody with that light. You know, Harriet was guiding people out. Like we need more people to guide people out, to teach them about the intricacies of the criminal justice system. Dr. Kev, I teach classes, and I've written down your book because I teach education classes. I teach classes to people who don't know, right? So what better place? I'm excited to grab your book because people do not, they think they know because of movies. They think they know because we sensationalized it with Hollywood and all of these things. I worked in the criminal justice system with kids in corrections for 7 years. Y'all, I have PTSD from that.
Yes.
You don't escape it just because you're in a different level, the level of violence and the level of just ugliness that exists within those walls and the ugliest part of our society. It's just a cesspool that is there, and we're expecting people to go in and come out clean as a whistle. And I think that that's just ridiculous. Mentorship and helping to change decision-making and problem-solving, to me, I think that's where we put our...
Izzy, what are you thinking? I see you down there thinking.
I got a few things to say based on everything that's been said. I wrote them all down too. So when we're talking about prisons, I think there's some narratives and ideas that we need to kind of start working against. Number one, and I've said this before, there has never been any in the history of our country, there has never been a non-profit prison. So we need to ditch the whole distinction between for-profit and non-profit. They're all for-profit. They always have been. Number two, we need to ditch the narrative that this is broken, because it implies at some point that it was fixed. It's not broken. The prison system is working exactly as it has been designed. It's not a coincidence that we went from slavery, and the moment we made slavery illegal, suddenly there were more prisons and prison population increased. That's not a coincidence. So that's another thing we need to change. And another thing that we need to change is this idea that if everything goes together, prisons work. It's a narrative. So there's Ms. Dolphin, John, these are examples of rehabilitation. But I would argue that these are examples of rehabilitation in spite of the system rather than because of the system. And I think it's dangerous if we start using examples like John and Kevin, because it lends a certain level of validity to what is entirely a punitive, violence-based system. If prisons were supposed to be rehabilitated, we wouldn't have solitary confinement, which has already been designated as a form of torture by the United Nations. If prisons were rehabilitated, we wouldn't have architects specifically designing them so that the person inside has no access to natural light. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for that other than violence and pain. So we have to ditch some of these narratives that imply that if we just do things correctly to somebody in prison, that they're going to come out rehabilitated and they're going to improve, because they're not designed to do that. There was a 2013 study done by a nonprofit called Arnold Ventures. They found that people who went into jails and prisons, even for just 2 to 3 days, it increased their chances of increased criminality equatively. Like, it just went up. The moment you go into jail and prison, even if it's for a day to 3 days, you come out, you have a higher chance of committing more crime than when you went in. So I think mentorship is important. It absolutely is. But I think instead of focusing on mentorship in and after prison, we need to be focusing on mentorship for prison. We need to be focusing on mentorship on the street to keep these people out of prison. Because the moment you go into prison, you're fucked. And if you triumph over it, then that is credit to your character and to something that you learned for yourself, but that is an exception to a rule. Because we need to be focusing on mentorship before. We need to be focusing on diversion. We need to be focusing on dealing with bail, cash bail. We need to be focusing on plea bargaining. because these are the things that are pushing people into prisons and that are designed to streamline people into prisons. We use that revolving door analogy, but we use it in the idea that the revolving doors are built by accident that way. A revolving door is designed for a specific purpose. It's a revolving door because they want it to be a revolving door. It's not like it was an open shut and they were like, oh, shit, how did this happen? It's designed that way. So I think mentorship and is important, but we need to ditch the idea that prisons were ever, ever really worked. Like, you can go back to the time, like Travis said, where with life, with Martin Lutz and everything like that, those were chain gangs. That was like right at, that was only like 20, 30, 40 years after they'd illegalized slavery, and they had to keep slaves. So what did? They put them in prison, and they put them to work. And that's still happening in a lot of states throughout the country. Alabama just started building 3 new prisons. Those are workhouses. That's all they are. So we need to stop, because narratives like John's and Kevin's are very important for examples for people, but we need to set prison idea because it lends validity to a system that does not work and has no interest in your rehabilitation.
But I think if we look at prisons, and it's easy, there's a difference between a prison and a jail. Most people don't know that. There's a difference. But I think if we look at this problem, and we break it down to where does it start? And it starts locally. When you have, and we've talked about it on this show several times, if you have a department where your performance evaluation is not based upon preventing crime, it's how many people you locked up and how many tickets you wrote. So when you take someone and you put them in the city jail or the county jail for 3 days or 30 days or whatever, they're getting a taste of what that is. And we're basically criminalizing people because they can't afford to pay this ticket or whatever. And I'm not saying people don't need to be put in jail, but I think society jumps to the federal level and we want to address it there. And let's go all the way back to where does it start? It even goes back further than that. When you disproportionately, we just had the judge in Tennessee that's retiring after she was just locking up kids left and right. Okay, these are juveniles. This woman is introducing these kids into the juvenile justice system, which is the precursor to the city or county jail, which then becomes a more technical college for the criminality. And then they moved them to the state, and then they moved them to the federal. So I think you're right. We are not in a preventive mode. Do we need to arrest people all the time? Some people are indigent. We have public defenders. Because people
can I go back one more? It starts in the schools when we separate these kids in ISS. When we separate those kids and we pull them out of that classroom and we stick them in ISS, that's where prison starts. Because the minute that we say your behavior is such that I as an adult cannot handle you and I need to separate you out and put you in a room full of other bad kids, that's when prison starts. Because we label children in kindergarten as being bad kids. We say they need medication. We start identifying as from a teacher perspective out of survival. They start trying to label kids so that they can get a mental grasp on what this particular kid is going to need in my classroom. And then you have administrators that say, oh, that's a kid. He needs to go ahead and move out. He's not on his medication. His parents don't care about it. They won't medicate. No, the parents understand that there's consequences to medication in a young brain. And they're not willing to try at 5 years old, right? This goes way back. Far deeper even than most people realize. We start the farming system into prison in our schools. I can walk into the school and spend less than 30 minutes in that school, and I can identify every child that will find themselves in the juvenile justice system. It doesn't take me 30 minutes. I just need to ask for 3 classrooms. It's not hard to find. The reality of it is when we start seeing kids that don't come into a middle-class white value system as education and can't get along there, then we start to weed them out. If you will come in with middle-class values, middle-class white values specifically, you do fine. But if you don't try and ascribe to that type of value system, trust and believe you are the foundation to that school-to-prison pipeline. We're banking on it. We're looking at your reading scores to make sure.
Go ahead, Doc.
Okay. What we were just talking about, and it does start with the youth, but it goes back to the front. It starts with the parents.
because the parent can only teach the child as much as that parent knows. If the parent never valued education or grew up traumatized, then we often pass that trauma down to the next generation. So when you, we're not going to separate because I don't want to talk like the white, black, man. But when you're living in more like the inner city, we have, like me and my staff, we were doing a meeting and we had like this little training. We watched the video and everything. So we're talking about the fight or flight syndrome, right? When we look at that. So, you know, you have that instilled in you, the fight or flight. But imagine that's a defense mechanism that's used to help protect you. But imagine when you have to continue to use that fight or flight system every day. It doesn't help you. It begins to hurt you because it's affecting you. That trauma is affecting you mentally, spiritually, and emotionally, and it's breaking you down. So then that's why trauma, and we teach this, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let someone else, but that's why the trauma needs to be taught to these to everyone, but really to the young people so that they can begin to understand that trauma not only affects you mentally, but it affects you spiritually, physically, and emotionally. So now I'm going to go on to this. When we talk about the young kids in school, I have one of these programs where we teach from grades 3 to 12 is called Headed Nowhere Fast. And if you can see this on my screen, this is a penitentiary right here. This is a jail. So when they're headed nowhere fast, this is where they're headed. And just like she said, when they separate the children. So when they separate these children, we ask them to send them to our program. We go into the public schools and we teach these young kids from, like I said, from grades 3 and up. So they're headed nowhere fast. And then after they're headed nowhere fast, that's a 12 session. We begin to work with them. We also have another 12 session program, which is called Changing Directions, because when we begin to help them, they begin to change directions. Mm-hmm. And both of these programs deal with self-esteem, decision-making, conflict resolution. You name it, we work with them with. And then there's another follow-up program called Change Is Up to You. So Change Is Up to You is where we work with these young people and help them to understand that there's rewards and consequences to their decisions and actions, because many of them are not being taught this. And it's coming from someone that they can relate, learn from, and respect. Because when they see me or they see one of the staff members, in most cases, they can relate to us. When I come into the classroom or when we come in there, they know that they can relate to us. And then we have another program, which is called Family First, where we teach the families about the trauma situation and how to build communication with one another so that we can understand what this child may be going through. And it's a lot. It's a whole lot. And then we have our final one that we help teach the youth is called 8 Steps to Healing. So 8 Steps to Healing is a trauma-based emotional support program where we steer these kids away from, like we say, the prison, the pipeline, because this is where it starts at when they're young. So if we don't catch it and give them the proper mentoring, because it's prevention, just like the young man said a few minutes ago, we have to work more on prevention than intervention, because if we prevent these things from happening, then we don't have to intervene. But these things are what we do with the youth. And we also have a slew of other programs for the individuals. Hopefully I have time to get into that. Mm-hmm. But working with these kids, that is, man, it's so very important. And I like to thank the doctor for bringing that up. But, yeah, this is what we do. We go into these schools and these juvenile systems and prevent. And it works. We have a great system, and it works. And I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let somebody else go. You know why it works? Because the youth know that we love them. We tell them that we love them. Many of them grew up not knowing or not hearing that someone loves them. And when I tell them or when my staff tell them we love them genuinely, and they can feel it, because most of us have been where they're at. Dr. So Kev, bro, to your point, Travis, I'm going to get you in a second. To your point, I'm going to tell you. I can tell you what you just said works, because when I was out on the streets, on a midnight shift, I didn't have all these resources and everything out there. One thing about that community knew me personally, and I knew them. And when they knew I came to their house and stayed maybe 30, 40 minutes, sat down and talked to them and said, I don't know the answer. Let's see what we come up with. Not me, but we. When I left, they knew I couldn't solve their problem. But their thing was, well, Officer Mason sat down. Man, he stayed 40 minutes with us. He did this. He did. When they look at you and they see that somebody cares, but this person that cares isn't like the typical establishment that's coming in telling me what to do with my life. They're saying, let's work on this together. I don't know what you're going through. I've never been a drug addict. I've never been this. I've never been that. I don't know. I can tell you what the system will do. So I think when we as people sometimes in society that have platforms or positions or prominence, when we lower ourselves to the leaf and say, I don't know. You teach me, and I can tell you what I would do and what resources I have. So now we have not taken their problem and put it on our head. We're going to walk them through their solution, because when they overcome it, it's their celebration, not the cities or the departments or anybody else. They need to be able to go to their quiet place and say, I did this and this person helped. See, so I think empowering the people by not in position of leadership, by not being afraid to say, I don't know. I've never been a meth addict. I'm not going to come in and tell you just say no to drugs. That's bullshit, man. Okay? Especially when it's prevalent in your community. But, what you just said, when people know you care, you're getting nothing out of it. They know I could have put them in jail and just been done with it and moved down the road. Why do they know? Because it's already happened to them 5 or 10 times. See, so what you're saying is true. Travis, I seen you were shaking your head, brother. You want to get in here real quick before I go up to Joe, because Joe been quiet.
I've been quiet because I'm listening to my philosophy on this is a whole different thing. But it does go back to what Izzy said about, when they freed slaves, they needed labor. I mean, if you take everything back, I mean, I'm talking about as far back as the Magna Carta, you would understand why prison systems are flourishing the way they're flourishing now. I mean, just real quick history, and I understand kind of don't like when you start breaking stuff down.
No, I just don't want to go back into the Stone Age.
Well, we're going to have to go not all the way back to the Stone Age, but when the king was ruling the whole area, he had two people. He had the Shah, that was his right hand man, and the Shah would go out and collect taxes. That was considered their debt. So when you didn't have your debt, you would go to the dungeon or the jail, and the person that actually ran the dungeon or the jail was called the Reeve. So after a few years, they decided to combine the two, and they called them the Shari, the sheriff. So this is nothing different than anybody else. Once they say today, you go to prison, you pay your debt to society. Well, here's the thing, and I know some of us, not all of us, have ever had bad debt. And once you pay your debt off, the doors open up for you, right? Well, why is it when an inmate pays his debt, he goes out and get treated like, oh, he's a convicted felon. Oh, he's a criminal. Oh, he got what he deserved when the cop kneeled on his neck. Those are the things I'm trying to figure out. Isn't that the same debt that you keep saying? Well, if you went to prison and you paid your debt to society, then why can't you start over and become the functioning member of society and get that piece of the American dream that they claim is out there for you to get? And then you can't get it, but then when the inmate leaves, when the person leaves the institution and he's back in 3 or 4 months because he can't find a job, he has nowhere to stay, so he has no choice but to go right back and do the same thing that got him in there in the first place.
And to your point, and I don't want to go down a religious rabbit hole here, and I'm not throwing Christianity out there, so don't nobody call up here talking about, y'all, he just bashing Christians. I'm going to say this before I go to Joe. This one gets me. We like to say a Christian nation. That's the way America chooses to label itself and brand itself. And we say that Jesus forgave my sins, so therefore I am a new creature. But these people go to jail and I'm not talking about your serial murderers and all this. I'm talking about your non-violent offenders, your average offenders that are in there. These people go to jail. They do their time. Jesus didn't go do that time for them. They did. See? But when they come out, they still have to mark on a form that they're a felon. They still have to discover and fight like John to get their voting rights back, to vote. Where all the while, when they come out and they can't vote, whether they buy cookies, chips, a steak at Longhorns or whatever, there's a tax on that meal. But yet they can't vote. See, that's called taxation without representation. So we really don't want to go down too many of these proverbial rabbit holes, not us, but the system and how we treat these people. If they did their time, they did their conditions, why is it relevant? I don't mind if law enforcement keeps track of the record of what they did in the past, but if they're going to work at Walmart, what business is it at Walmart that they had a marijuana possession charge? What business is it if they did that time? And then you, at the same time, you'll go, well, I cheated on my wife, and I stole this, and God forgave me, so I'm a new person. That's oxymoronic, man. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, Joe, you've been patient, brother.
Well, there's a lot to unpack, but it's really hypocrisy, but that's maybe the end of that. But it's interesting listening to the perspective, because between John's story and Dr. Dalton, you know, that not that anybody remembers this guy, but Richard Pryor talked about the same thing. Richard Pryor talked about how he grew up in East St. Louis, and his mother was running a brothel in it, too. But the other thing you got to look at is statistics involved in this thing. Right now in the United States, we have almost 3.5 million people locked up. That's a small nation. You know, the other thing that we're not looking at is what does this impact, how does this really impact this thing called the GNP? I mean, that's probably more conspiratorial than you want to talk about, but, and it does. I mean, there's some industries, I won't get into them right now, but there's some industries that work off the back of, as Izzy likes to point out, free labor. There's a bunch of industries tied to it. But there's something that Izzy says, and I have to hit it. We look at all these issues of returning citizens, as they're called, rights and whatever else. But it's still tied to one court system, voting. The people that changed the laws, you know what was coming, Izzy. You knew what was coming. You know, people that change the laws or don't change the laws, the people that set up the plea bargains. Every one of those people are tied into a voting system. So it seems to me that, and again, and I agree with it, yeah, the system is not great. It ain't correct. We keep electing the wrong people, but we keep electing. That's the thing. I mean, if we look at this last January 6th issue from last year, this guy tried to destroy democracy. He tried to take away the right to, for people to vote. The right for people to even have the voice to say that he disagreed. So if nothing else, one of the first things that should be talked about or done with the citizens coming out of these prisons or these institutions is getting them registered to vote. If you want to talk about correcting this, you guys know what's going on in the system. You're not going to beat them from outside. Beat them from the inside.
And Joe, to your point, if you can tell me that I'm being released from prison, and now I am eligible to have a state ID card.
Okay.
I am eligible to have my driving privileges reinstated. But I just can't vote. See, that's the undermining of it. These people worked. They did their time, whether it was 5 months, 5 weeks, or 5 years. And they played your game. They followed your rules. You released them because they did. But you will punish them for life, for a label. And let's be truthful about it. It's only selected people who are punished, not black and white, but poor people and lower middle class are the ones, black or white, who are systemically punished by this system. They don't get to come out of jail and get a show on Fox News after they got a presidential pardon. So, I mean, the system is corrupt. John, I know, brother, you and Dr. Dolphin for a minute, y'all chew it up for a minute, because both of y'all And what we're talking about today, y'all are the resident experts.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of great things said by everyone on this panel. And one of the things that I wanted to say is, I believe it was Izzy who said something about in the slavery or something. Someone said something. But if you look at the 13th Amendment, and it says that, you want to recite it, Izzy?
You go ahead, Don. You got it.
No man should be enslaved except for a punishment for a crime for which he has been duly tried for. Well, I just had a conversation with Stan about a lot of the things that are being said. And one of the things that I realized when it really clicked for me is when Connecticut wanted to get rid of its 500 most dangerous inmates, and they put us on a block, like an auction block, like what you would have during slavery. And you had the state of Hawaii, the state of Minnesota, and Virginia, and all these different states bidding to get our service. And I sat back and I said, man, how is this not like slavery? How is this not like the auction block that they used during the time of slavery? And it was the time when I began to really, like, start to look at myself. And, you know, we talk about these programs. These programs are inside of prison. But the problem is you have these guys that go a little, we call them skid bits. And there's no knock against anybody, because anytime you're taken away from your family, it's a painful thing. But so I've been on the list. I was number 98. So some new inmates come in, and they got parole coming up in a year or so. Now I'm bumped back to number 300. Now the reason why they're taking the program is because, you know, if you want to get parole, you have to have these programs under your belt. So basically they're giving these guys this ultimatum like, well, you're not going to make parole if you don't take these programs. Where you had dudes who've been locked up 15, 20 years who wanted to take the program because they wanted to better themselves. And Kev would agree with me, Izzy, and I want to share this with you guys, that the guys who have done a long time are less likely to come back. And they sat in prison for 20, like, and me and Stan had this conversation about correction. If it's a Department of Correction, at what point is an inmate or convict or whatever he wants to call himself, at what point has his behavior been corrected? Because I know guys who've been in at 10 years and they end up doing 35, but the year 10, he's been called a model inmate. If he's a model inmate, are you saying that he's fit to go back out into society? Then why hold him another 25 years? If it's about correction, but you're letting people back out into the system because they did a program. They didn't do the program. They actually went through the program, and they did the program because the program states they will make parole if they have these programs under their belt. You understand? And that's the reason why a lot of these programs don't seem to work. But programs only work when the individual works. You have to work. I can't just go through a program, I get all this paperwork, I get all this information, and I just toss it to the side when I get home. Here's another last part of it, and I want Brother Kev to come in and speak to it, because I think Travis hit on it. And it's talking about jobs and stuff like that. Coming home, you want to find a good job. And a lot of the women out here now, I applaud them. They have good jobs. They're in position because of housing programs and different things that they have. And now these guys make the mistake of wanting to come home and live with a woman, right? The smartest thing a guy can do, if you don't have that support of family, is go into a shelter and have them set you up with some type of housing. And I'm going to tell you why. Because there's going to be a frustration, right? You want to have that authoritative position of being the man of the house. but you haven't been there for 10 years, 5 years, 4 years. And your kids, they done grew up a little bit. And they looking at you like, where you come from, you turning the TV all of a sudden. You getting all the cereal. You eating all the cereal off, my cereal off. See, and a lot of guys make this mistake of going to come home and live with these women and instead of getting themselves together. And there's a problem. So now you got a woman, she's making money, she has her own car, has her own place, and you're frustrated because everybody that's seeing that you're a felon is turning you away, right? So what you do? Man, I got to bring something to the table because she complained. My food stamp card ain't good enough. So what you do? You go out, I'm just going to hustle a little bit on the weekends. Or I'm just going to have one or two people on my phone. Well, what did that turn into? That turns right back into what you know. But we are not products of our environment. And we got to get away from that belief system that we are products of our environment. We are products of our thinking. And the Bible says it this way, as a man thinketh, so is he, right? We're products of our thinking. If I'm a product of my environment, then explain how did one of my brothers go to college and my other brother went to the armed forces and became a cop. We came from the same environment, but I made poor choices. So now what we're doing now is trying to correct the choices. And I agree with you, Izzy, it's about prevention, but it's also about intervention because these same men that are in prison are coming home and they're going to be in our community. And we want men that's in our community that's built like Cap. We want men that's built like Joe and Travis and Stan and you and women built like Dr. Corsi in our community. And just because a man went through the stages of prison don't mean that he can't be a Joe Moses. So we need both. We need prevention and intervention. And if the brothers are on intervention, on prevention, then somebody else get on intervention.
You know, John, before I go to Doc Kev, we got a lot of callers that I see are listening. And to all you callers that are there listening on your phone, if you want to chime in, just press 1 on your phone, and I'll see a little thumbs up on my computer here, and we'll get you straight in. Come on, Doc Kev. Bring it, brother.
Man, John said a mouthful, man. He touched on a lot. But in my book, If These Prison Walls Could Talk, I talk about products of our environment. And you were correct, John, but one of the things I want to say is this. We can become a negative or positive product of our environment. See, our environment just doesn't have to produce negative products. You know, two individuals may have grown up in the same household. I think you spoke a little bit about it. Two individuals may have grown up in the same household, same environment. One became a professor, one went to jail for murder, right? But they grew up in the same environment. One's a positive product of the environment, one's a negative. So the way that we use these terms and things is very important. And one of the things that I teach the men and women when we go into these prisons is that words have power, right? Mm-hmm. So what we say and what we allow to come into our thought systems, these things have power over our thoughts and actions. So, again, I'm getting ready to run through this real quick. Oh, in 2006, I was in federal prison, Raybrook, New York, 15 minutes away from Canada. One of the roughest institutions on the East Coast. So guys were getting killed and stabbed and everything every day. Now, I wasn't the roughest guy in prison, but I could carry my own. And I always was a respectful type of person. I always been that way, even when I was running the streets. So one day my counselor, she came to me and she said, Mr. Dolphin, I need your help. So I looked at her, I said, you need my help. She said, these men don't have anything to do here. Now this woman, she cared. She was a white woman. She cared about the individuals. So she came to me. So I'm wondering why she came to me. And one of the things I try to stress the individuals who are in prison that people are always watching you.
people are always watching you. So she was watching me. She understood certain different things about me, because when you came into the prison, I had to tell guys that were from Harrisburg that, yo, don't jump nobody on that washing machine. That'll get you killed. Don't jump nobody in this microwave. Don't touch TV. Don't do it. There was a lot of different things where prison and traumatized to you. It's like, it's sad. I stressed it. No one ever goes to prison. So listen. So she came to me. So me and her sat down. I said, I said you need a program? I said, I've always been smart in school, but the streets got me. So I went. So I said, come back and see me next week. So a week later, she came back and saw me, and I had put this together. This is called Back to the Future. Back to the Future is an in-depth look at your past, because if you want to solve any problem, they taught us this in math class. You have to go to the root of the problem. So you have to go back to your past, which is most times us, is how we grew up. So Back to the Future helps you deal with your past. It helps you look at your current situation and deal with it, and then we help you chart a successful course to the future. So we're built on education, because education is the foundation. You can only do better once you know better. And then we help these individuals understand the importance of voting, because you can give a person their voting rights back, but if they don't understand the importance of voting, mm-hmm. it's not going to mean anything. Then we work with them on the need to change. Some of them don't see the need to change. Some of them didn't see the need that know that their family members need them out there. That see, once you go, my mother died in prison. My mother was in prison, and she died in prison. While I was in prison, my mother was in prison. I didn't get to go to my mother's funeral. For most people, their mother is the most dearest thing to them. I didn't get to go to my mother's funeral. So when I explain to these men that when you're in prison for most charges and the things that you've done, a lot of times they're not going to let you go to funerals and things like that. So you're going to miss out on things that you'll never be able to get back. So we get them to understand the importance of decision making. We get them to understand financial literacy, because it's okay for you maybe to have to start in public housing, but we don't want you there for generation after generation after generation. Your children are still in public housing. So we teach you the importance of financial literacy, credit, budgeting. We teach you all these things, preparing you for when you get back out. We teach you how to do your time productively. It's like John said, we don't want the Excels and these other type of things. We want to invest in self-help books, because if they don't have this program here, we have a network of guys who may have, their family member may have sent them a book here instead of sending them, okay, this week, don't send me no money. I'll put a commissary, whatever. Can you send me this How a Man Thinketh? So you send that book in. So if John got this book, I can read his book. He can read my book, and we can transfer all these books around. And that's how you begin to educate yourself and make it better. We teach the individuals that from the time you go to prison, from day the first second, you have to begin to rehabilitate yourself, because it's a process. It goes through stages. Like John said again, you just can't think that you're going to get out and turn this switch off. So we're not going to do that. So we help them teach a lot of different things. And we've been teaching this. I'm going to say this. This program right here, I've been teaching. I taught it in prison in 2006. I started teaching it in federal prison. I've been teaching it ever since 2006. I go back into the prison. And this is the thing right here. When me and that counselor at FCI Raybrook began this program, I had over a year's waiting list for individuals to get in there. I was locked up with guys from The Wire. Many of you guys may know the TV show The Wire. These guys were in the program. I was locked up with guys from Into Deep. You guys may have seen the movie. These real-life guys I was locked up with, and they were attending these programs because many of them wanted to change, but they didn't know how to change. See, some individuals want to change, but they don't know how. We have to be taught. Even me, while I was in prison teaching individuals, there was individuals like From The Wire and certain other guys that were teaching me, helping me mold and shape my character, because one day I was going back out. And this is the thing. That was a 12 course. Then we had headed in the right direction, which is the substance abuse courts, where we help individuals understand that you have to be able to put those other things aside if you're going to be successful and make it. It's the anger management. You have to understand your triggers and all of these things as well. And again, change is up to you. You can have all the support in the world, but if you're not willing to change, if you're not going to accept that support, then it's not going to matter. The reason why I know that, because that individual was me. My family supported me through so much, but guess what? Every time I came home from prison, I wanted to go right back to the streets. I didn't want the support that they gave me. And guess what happened? I ended up right back into the streets. And then we got the family first again. The family first teaches these men how to come home and become productive parents, how to communicate better with their children, how to forgive. See, unforgiveness is one of the biggest things that keep us chained to the past. Mm-hmm. In order for us to break those chains, we have to forgive. We don't. No one owes you anything when you go to prison. No one owes you anything. You have to work on yourself. And when you get back out, if you have children, you owe it to your children to be successful, productive citizens. You owe it to your community to be successful, productive citizens. You owe it to your spouse, to your mother. Hopefully you get back out there and you're able to be with her so that she doesn't pass away while you're in prison. And then last but not least, we have, again, 8 Steps to Healing, where we help these individuals understand that I've been traumatized. Everyone that's on this call, everyone that's listening in this world has been traumatized by something in some form, fashion, or way. And so with men and women that go to prison, we've been traumatized to the point as where as though it's compounded. And when we get out, we think that we're living a normal life, but in many ways, people can look at us and be like, wow, what's going on with this guy? So you have to understand that this mentorship, like we talked about, is very, very important. See, that's what we stress is mentor. We have to mentor when we talk about reentry, cutting down the recidivism rate. In order to cut down this recidivism rate, you get individuals like Mr. John that can take a group of men and some other women that may have been in prison that has been successful. When they come home, you can take these group of men and women and show them how to become successful, how you were able to fight through the pitfalls and the challenges that you did, that you were faced with. So it's a lot. It's a lot. And this show, we're not going to have enough time to cover it all. But listen, prison reform is my passion. Prison reform is it's something that we all need to get involved in. Prison reform is something that we need to understand so that the next generation, we can give them something so that they can build off of. Because if they don't have anything to build off of, the house is going to continue to fall. So, I mean, it's a lot, man. So I'm going to turn it back over to somebody.
Right, Doc. Just real quick, because I'm just going to insert this. It's funny, I was listening to all that, and I'm getting how we treat people who are in prison, rightfully or wrongfully, because there's a hell of a lot of innocent people in jail. We see them getting out every day. But I see that prison label, and I see how we as a society look down on these people because of that label. Let me remind everybody that anybody, everybody, or as we say in Texas, everybody, who's anybody in the Bible, including Jesus, was locked up. That part. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to Kev, and he could confirm, and I know Travis worked inside the corrections, some of the most gifted, talented people you will find inside the Department of Corrections. I kid you not. Like, it's amazing. Like, dudes can take cigarette paper and make picture frames and all types of, take soaps and carve them. And one of the things that the warden allowed me to do was, dudes used to go crazy, be like, yo, man, you got so much pull, was that he used to allow me to do like talent shows. And the talent that's inside the Department of Correction is ridiculous. And I'm talking about some great writers, great thinkers, are all inside the prison. Now, one of the programs that I would love to see, Kev, is for someone to go inside and really shape these and hone these dual skills. Because if you could get these guys to bring that talent, like some of the guys that you used to work out, and I say, oh, man, you work out 7 days a week, three times a day. Why you don't take that and make that your living when you get out? You doing all that while you're in here, how is that going to translate into money for you? Use what you have to go out and create a business. Get a job as take up nutrition while you're here. So not only can you write up a workout program, you can write up a diet. Take up nutrition. Someone needs to go in and really, like, work with these men on their gifts, because everyone has a gift and a talent. It just has to be fine-tuned and brought out. And I just wanted to say that, and what are your thoughts on that? Or anybody? Corsi, I see you ready.
Well, that redefines the language, right? So when we find something that we're good at and when we can grow in those areas, then we get to redefine that label that we have already accepted. I think that that is, especially now with computers and with what we're able to do here, we're all having a conversation together, right? There's so few limitations. You had to physically get into the prison. Now we have telecommunication that would allow for mentorship and all of those things. We talk about mentorship, but for me, my reality of it is on the front end, right? If we do all this stuff on the front end, then we can prevent it. The one thing I wanted to add, and that brought up earlier, and it sparked my head, because I work with kids, I get parents that are very frustrated. The school's frustrated, so they're calling the parents. The parents are frustrated. And so then I come in, and they're like, just don't walk in that, right? We did that scared straight idea. And then they're like, then I had parents who have sat across the table from me and a 10-year-old and said, just tell CPS to come get us. Mm-hmm. I can't do anything else with them. Mm-hmm. Just tell them to come get them. Just let the system have them. And I've had well-meaning parents. Those are not my most well-meaning. But I've had well-meaning parents that have come to me and said, Prue, can't you just go take him and walk him up for a while? Just call him and put him in the system. That'll teach him. Mm-hmm. And my thing as Dr. Behavior and Dr. Cruz is don't ever let your babies get to the system. Mm-hmm. Whatever you have to do, I'm just speaking this as loud and shouting it from the rooftop. Whatever you have to do, never let the system get your baby. Because this is the misconception that I think we all have. And that this is what we've talked about for the last hour and 15 minutes. The system does not have a desire to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
The system has a desire to do what the system is designed to do, which is product. It does not have the care and concern for the 12-year-old who's acting out at school and can't seem to get his friendship group together. The system sees him as a number. The system is not going to create the change that these parents, oftentimes these single parents, are looking for and trying to create change for their babies. And the last piece I'll add to this is from that preventative side and then from that treatment side is in the state of Texas, we have Waco Center for Youth. It is the only adolescent mental health facility in the state of Texas.
Yep.
One, has anybody been to the schools lately? Has anybody walked in anywhere where young people are? Y'all, we have one. I think they had 48 kids or something there at Christmas time. We are not putting our money where our mouth is. We are putting our money where we make money.
That's
we
right.
Don't make money off of improving mental health. We don't make money off of creating stable individuals that go out and earn living. We make money off of numbers that people can make money off of facts of. And so I keep screaming from the rooftops because it's the children that I work with that are already screaming at 5 and 6 years old for help because they know something's not right. And Dr. Kev, you are absolutely right about our brain and the way that our brains are primed. Our brains are primed for connection, but trauma creates the need to protect.
Yes.
And when you move from a connection brain to a protection brain, you get our criminal justice system. That's awesome.
The money is not in treatment.
Money is not a cure. Money is a trick.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Therein lies the problem.
But Joe, like I said, when we go back, just on that point, when we go back into, if you have police departments that operate on grants and money and stats and producing statistics, then you have jails that are built by GEO Corp and some of these other places that are for-profit prisons. Now, some of the people who are in, not just in your criminal justice system or your court system, but people who are special interest people in the community who have influences over ordinances and proposed city laws, these people have stock in these companies. So it is in their best interest to put asses in beds. And it's really funny because schools tend to operate the same way prisons do. You're paid by asses in desks or asses in cells. And it's that way. That's why you don't see a lot of expulsions. You see suspensions where the child is still technically on the rolls, so therefore the money's not affected, but you don't see a lot of expulsions. And so I think our system, when we look at it, and that's thank God for this show where we go deeper than what people know. Let's talk about the money. You know, follow the money. Follow the money. You know, you have officers in this country who are frustrated because they're trying to prevent crime on your beat because they're sick of dorm reports. They're sick of running call to call. They want to solve these problems. They feel defeated because they can't, whether it's police administration or the city, they can't because they don't have the time or the resources. So these people keep going to jail. And then we want to say, well, we've got a big crime problem. Well, you don't want me to solve the crime because you're knocking me down in my evaluation because I only arrested 5 people last month. But you don't want to talk about all the burglary motor vehicles that didn't happen, the robberies that didn't happen, the sexual assaults that didn't happen, maybe because Stan was visible and not sitting at the jail with somebody on a barking dog ticket. See, this system is so riddled with people making money off of it, including, you know, these folks. Look at your probation. Okay, you're on probation. You got to pay this outlandish probation fee. Okay. If they don't pay it, what happens to them? They go back to jail. Are they going to go back and do their 3 years? No, hell no, they're not going to do that 3 years because the first thing they're going to do after 20, 30 days is contact them and go, hey, we're willing to give you another chance. If you catch these things up and do this, see, we want to come back and recoup the money and keep you on that payment plan because why? The county is now dependent upon having that money. Just like municipalities are dependent on having that ticket money. You don't pay the ticket, guess what we're going to do to you? We're going to put you in jail. You may only be there for a day, but we're going to say, hey, we're going to give you another 10 days, go down, contact the judge, get put on a payment plan. Why? Because it's more important that we have that money than you learn to stop at a stop sign or you learn not to speed or wear a seatbelt or whatever. So it's not about correcting the behavior. It's about what can we get out of this violation. Everybody got quiet. Travis, I see you shaking your head.
All right, take y'all off me. I'm not shaking my head. I mean, I'm agreeing with you because everything that you guys are saying is spot on. And the problem is that this has always been my cynical fear. And it's just like we know, everybody on this panel knows, pretty much Stan, your listeners know. I guarantee that we can sit here now for the next couple of hours and have literally a solution to all of the problems. Everything that Dr. Corsi said, Kim said, John said, everything. We can have solutions on deck right now. And the sad part about it is nobody's going to listen. That's the cynical part of it. Because everything that you guys have been doing, I've been doing since literally the first year I worked in the prison system. I got in Big Brothers. I got in everything, trying to curtail all of this. And it just seemed to me like I'm just standing in front of a large dike with a bunch of holes and only got, 10 fingers and 10 toes. And I can't stop the leaks. And it seemed to me, so eventually I just got to pull everything out and run away and say to hell with it. Let the village flood. I don't know what else to do.
But brother, I don't think that it's Stan's mission or John's or Cam's or Joe's or anybody's to solve it or fix it. No, I think for me, it is my job to bring awareness and to do what I can do. See, I think that when we look at the problem and say, not only am I going to be the one to slay the dragon, but I want to stand on the hill with the shield and the sword and say, look at what I did. Maybe it's the generation long after Stan is gone. But I think where we have failed in problem solving, especially in particular to the criminal justice system in America, is everybody wants to see the results in their lifetime. Everybody wants to claim the mantle, and nobody wants to say, I may do nothing but carry the torch from A to B, but when I hand it off to this young guy or young woman, they may see.
Well, maybe the dragon, we got to watch out for the dragon that takes human form. Because no matter what we do, it's always going to be somebody shooting it down. It's always going to be somebody trying to prevent it.
And that's human nature. But we can't say
it's like something that keeps going on and on and on.
Right.
If he ain't human nature, that's the only excuse that we have for it. I say, fuck human nature. Let's kick human nature in the ass.
Go ahead, Dr. Kev.
I wanted to say something, right? But that's how life is. We have to have that balance. We're never going to wipe out crime. We're never going to wipe out anything completely, right? But this is where I'm gonna plug this in. That is just like Stan just said. No one person. It's all of our. Just like you guys can see my logo breaking the chains. We're all links in this chain. Right, we're all links in this chain. No one can do it by themselves. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, I applaud you for doing, you know, the work that you've been doing. And when we come together, this is when we can make a bigger difference. No matter what somebody's trying to prevent us from doing, if we're working in these silos, this is when the situation seems to be more difficult. I don't like the word hard. Nothing in this world is hard for me. Remember I said words have power. They play tricks on you. So, but if each one of us do what we're supposed to do and come together, then it makes the situation a little bit more easier. So this is why, and I'm going to speak about the city of Harrisburg, what Breaking the Chains has done. We just did our grand opening two Fridays ago. We opened up the Breaking the Chains Community Resource Center, where we provide resources for individuals who's coming home from prison, who we provide affordable housing for battered women and children and displaced families. We provide counseling and mentoring for troubled youth, for individuals that's coming home. We provide job resources, and we do certain different things to help provide job trainings. And if we can't do those things in-house, well, you know, we have another entity that may be able to provide those resources. So anyone in the Central PA area can come to this resource center, which is 2134 North 6th Street. You can come there and get the type of resources that you're looking for. No matter what it is, no matter what you're going through, we'll have those resources to connect you to, or we'll provide them ourselves. So understanding that, we're always going to have that challenge. Travis, you're absolutely correct, man. We're always going to have that challenge. But I always think about, what if they would have gave up on me? When would I be? Not to say that you're giving up, Travis, or that you, but what if they would have gave up on me? Because many people counted me out. But if the people that had really gave me that support and stood behind me, where would I be at today? So the Breaking the Chains Resource Center, we do a lot of productive things for people in the city of Harrisburg and surrounding areas. So that is one of the ways that I think that when we come together, that we'll make this situation a little bit more easier for everyone.
Gotcha.
Real quick, Trent.
If I may.
Go ahead, John.
I just wanted to say that I have to agree with Travis that it has to be more than just awareness, right? We all have to make a sincere effort at working as if we could fix the problem. And I think that's one of the places that we fall short at. We don't see the job through. And what drives me is that, and I know someone mentioned he was building three new prisons in Alabama earlier. right? Yeah. I know who those three prisons are being built for. You understand? So I have to work hard or work strong enough as if I can fix the problem, because I know if it ain't my son or grandson, it's my great-grandson that they're building these prisons for. So we have to see the job through. It's more than awareness to me is stand and saying, hey, there's a ditch over there. Watch where you guys step at. If I got one bag of soil, that bag of soil may not be able to fill that ditch, but I got to throw that bag in there. And it's more than just saying there's a ditch over there that people are falling in. We have to be able to fill that ditch. And it's going to take Joe to throw a bag of soil. Dr. Corsi, Travis, Kevin, you stand. Izzy, we all have to work and do our part in it.
Right.
To me, it's just beyond awareness.
And, John, you're right. But be in it, your personal commitment. Everybody here is personally committed to this show because they're here every week. One of the beauties about it, I don't go back and look at no likes and clicks. I don't give a damn who likes it, who clicks it. Right now, we only got, what, 5-6 viewers on the Facebook? Guess what? Stan don't care, because it's not how many are watching. It's who. It's not important that the one whose life has changed because of something said here says, well, Stan did this, or Joe did this, or Dr. Kev, or Dr. Ford. That's not important. I think for me, and this is Stan's deal. I've been through a lot from the start of this show and everything I went through while I was still working doing this show. Some of you know about it. Some of you don't. I never really cared about numbers. I never really cared who all flashes this show. It's not important. You know what is important? When you get a little side message from somebody that's drug addicted, somebody that's homeless. We had 2 years ago a homeless guy call this show, live on this show, and said, you don't remember me, but right now I'm in Waco by the Target on Boston next to a dumpster using the library's free Wi-Fi to call your show because one day Starbucks called the police on me because I was sitting out in their little patio area, homeless. But you came and you bought me breakfast and gave me $20. That ain't but one viewer. This homeless guy who's worried about eating, getting rained on, having nowhere to go, nothing to do, he knows I can't fix the world's problems. I can't even fix his. Who wakes up and goes to a dumpster by a Target next to the city library just because it gets free Wi-Fi, not to look at pornos, not to go on TikTok and make them dumbass videos, but to listen to this show. Because he knows I know that guy. That is what's real. This fight isn't Stan's fight or Joe's or Dr. Corsi's or Dr. Kev's. It's not. When we make the fight ours, we begin to destroy ourselves because you are not going to defeat this. We have to have a foundation in place to have a house. And everybody wants to see the roof put on and live in it. The difference between a moment and a movement is sacrifice. Are you willing to give up your Saturdays? Are you willing to give up your time to say, I know I will not live to fruition to see all this come about? And then look at yourself in the mirror and say, it's not really important that I do. But I'm in it to win it. For me, for Stan, God called me to run a play. He didn't say score a touchdown, get a first down. He called me to run a play. And when my play is over, guess what? Another player is going to come in, younger, faster, stronger, smarter. And I'm good with that. I'm good with that. And I think America is suffering because we don't have good, effective, truthful, transparent leadership. That's willing to say, this is Stan. I'm coming with all of my faults, all of my dirty baggage. I'm no better than the least of you out here. Even when I had a badge and a gun, I was no better than the least out there because I lived on the same street with them. When we make this fight our personal fight, it's got to be about me and I and me and look at me. We see enough of that bullshit, particularly in the black community. Hello, somebody.
Well, let me just say this. I agree with a lot of that you just said, but I will say this. It is a fight for me, and it is about me, we, us. It's about all those terms. It's all about the inclusiveness of it. Here's the thing. Right now in America, 40% of the prison population is black Americans, even though we're only 13% of the population. Now, think about that. Think about that. That should be scary to every motherfucker sitting on here listening. I mean, if that doesn't tell you, I mean, I used to tell my students this. Just because they call it a conspiracy doesn't mean it isn't. Now, you let that loose. Now, if you don't think that they're coming for you, you're a fool.
Absolutely.
Now, the other part of this is why. To Kevin's point, to John's point, to Izzy, to the doctor, of course, and everyone, we have to make this our fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you see here is genocide. Well, what you want. But look up the term. You know, Oscar Wilde said, you know, what's done is done, past is past. That's not true. The past is prologue, according to Shakespeare. The past is prologue. You learn from your past. In order to go to the future, you got to see what happened. If we didn't see what happened in the past, we let Hitler arise again. Well, look at January 6th.
Let me do this real quick, Joe. Let me grab a caller.
Look at what's happening in this country.
Let me grab a caller real quick. 404 area code 1011. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Patricia, and I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, and I had opened up a housing program for men that are being released from the penal system, a supportive housing program. And I just want to thank you, gentlemen, for inspiring me to keep going with this housing. And so these guys can get permanent housing instead of living in these housing programs forever and ever because they're being denied housing because of their criminal background. You gave me the fight, and the fight is on. And thank you. That's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
Now, Patricia, you've been on there watching for a while listening to the show. I got your number written down. Can I reach out to you later on? Because I'm here in Atlanta, too.
Yes, you can.
All right, because we can do some stuff. See, this is it. This is what I'm talking about. This the networking, the reaching out. They're saying that we don't have 10,000 viewers right now. But it ain't a matter of how many. It's who. It's who. That lady right there is a testimony.
Well, think about the Battle of Thermopylae. 300 Spartans fought off damn near half a million Persians. So it ain't the size of the battle. It's the fight in them.
And Joe, I mean, the lady's timing was just impeccable. Her timing was impeccable. We're inclusive. And guess what? This is a battle for all of us. If you're middle class in America today, and you say, well, I don't relate to anything they're saying. I don't have any family members in jail, and I don't break any laws. You don't have to break laws to go to jail in America. I've been a cop. Trust me. I got Dr. Dolphin, I got John, I got Dr. You don't have to break laws to go to jail. If standards lying, then why is the Innocence Project even exist? Why are we finding out every day, every week, there's another guy getting out of jail that spent 20, 25, 30, 40 years in prison wrongfully convicted? So don't tell me we got the greatest justice system in the world. That's bullshit.
And I got a question for the panel. Do we really think that society is ready for giving reform returning citizens any type of special privileges? And the reason why I'm asking that is I think of the story of the fatted calf. It's a passage out of the Bible where the son left home and went after the riches of the world, and he ended up being left with nothing, and then he returned home, and the father got elated, and he said to the son, go get my fatted calf, and the other son said, well, why are you celebrating him when I never left? I've never done any wrong. And it goes to what you just said. there's a mentality out here. Lucky him. You break the law and you get this. And they see it as someone rewarding someone for bad behavior. So my question to the panel, and that's to anybody up here, do we think that society is ready for any type of special privileges for returning citizens?
Let me jump on that
real quick, Joe.
Just this week, and I think I told the story to somebody else, but I want you to hear this. Just this week, a judge in Illinois released a kid who had been convicted of a sexual assault, rape. This guy was let out within less than 4 months. He was sent like 6 to 10 years. And the reason he let him out was because he said he served enough time. Now, does anybody on this panel think that anybody on this panel, including Corsi, they would have let your ass out? Now, what do you think played into that judge's decision? A judge who is elected by the same people that you're talking about this society. So the first thing you two need to do, Kevin and John, is make sure that everybody comes out that jail as a registered voter. That's what you want to terrify. You want to turn the system on its head, make every one of them registered voter. You want to turn this around. But it ain't going to start by talking on shows and not doing anything else. If there's nothing behind the back, don't fight. Come into no gunfight with no fucking water balloon.
There you go. Dr. Cam.
With the filibuster. Yeah. Now, think about that real quick with the filibuster. They try how to get there. They can. How to get there.
Okay, I don't want to do the politics show, though. I don't want to do the politics show today. Go ahead, Ed, then we go to Dr. Cam.
I mean, I'm not going to say don't vote. You definitely should vote. But I'm going to say the one thing I've been wanting to bring up, actually, is that we need to start having conversations about our culture. Kevin and John were talking about products of our environment. We can argue back and forth whether that's a real thing or not, but we're definitely all products of our culture. And we need to acknowledge that in this country, and I'm all on the lines of Travis on this one in terms of there just being, it's not one dragon, by the way. It's a bunch of different, you know, like 50 different colors. But our society, we've got to start changing the culture of our society because our society has been indoctrinated into a culture of punitiveness and punishment and retribution and righteousness of doing all of those things. And you brought up Christianity before, and you did it in the context of it being a hypocrisy of in certain ways. And I oftentimes think it's not hypocritical. When it comes to our criminal justice system, we're just Old Testament about it. Like, we're not New Testament, you know, after he had the kid and chilled out. We're Old Testament. We're, you know, you were bad, so I'm going to drown most of the planet, and then we'll start over again. We're very old, so we're kind of adhering to Christianity, just the older version of it. And I think when, in answering John's question, if we are going to be doing these things, we have to start changing the culture of our society. Because Kevin talked about that we're all links in a chain. And there are people like Kevin that are out there, and they're believing that. But I'll tell you what, that goes against what we have been indoctrinated to believe that America is. America is individualistic. America is exceptional. American exceptionalism and individualism has guided us to the point that we are at today where people are not willing to contribute to that change and are just looking out for themselves. They're looking out for the me. They're looking out for the I. And if we don't change that culture, we're just going to keep repeating the histories that Joe's talking about, Travis is talking about, because we are a culture that has been built on the idea of righteous, vengeful punitiveness. We think that we are going to burn our way out of this problem. And until we accept that and accept our responsibility in creating it, because that's another thing. We can vote until the cows come home. But if we don't change the culture, we're going to keep voting for these things. That's how we got the 94 crime bill. That's how the filibuster got thrown out. That's how we got to all of these things that we're dealing with now. Because we as a society, many of us still embrace the idea that there is vindication and rightness in aggressive punishment. And no matter how many numbers come up, if we keep promoting that idea in our culture through art, through movies, through all entertainment in general, through what we read, it's not going to change because there's still enough of us that think that, yeah, that act was bad, that was wrong, but for this guy deserves it. And if we do it to this guy and this woman and this person, this time it'll work. And because it worked maybe that one time, based on how we're told the story, then that proves that we're right. And because America, at its heart, we are an individualistic society that really likes to focus on punishment. And if we're not changing the culture, it doesn't matter how many of us vote, because we're going to vote against our own interests.
Let me get that.
We love the grace that comes with it. You're absolutely right. We love to punish everyone else, but we love to have grace bestowed upon us when we find ourselves in that situation.
Dr. Kev, final thoughts, brother, to sum everything up and let us know, people know where they can follow you and how they can get in touch with you.
Okay, well, one of the things I'm going to say, I'm going to answer John's last question to some degree. As a society, us as a whole, I don't think that everyone is buying into that, but you have many organizations, and I am a part of many of them, like the Reform Act with Jay-Z and Meek Mill and those guys. I'm part of that Reform Act. I am a chapter member of a national organization called Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, which is out of California. And again, Breaking the Chains, we're a national organization where we do work in different cities and states. But what we do, and anyone that's on the call or anyone that's on the panel or anyone listening, you can reach out to me if you want any assistance, like with the young lady that called up about her reentry houses or whatever. We do rich reentry houses for men and women in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania as well, and also in South Carolina. We also do reentry as well for the houses for men. So these are the things that we want you guys to understand. Support. Again, support is so very, very important. If we don't have the support from one another, from each one of us, like we're on this call right now, this support is so big because we all come from, you know, from different angles, from different aspects. All of our views makes it stronger. No one view is the strongest view or anything like that. So that's why, you know, we like to sit around and they say, well, if I'm the smartest person sitting at the table, I'm at the wrong table. Right? So we all need to come together as a collective. But again, Breaking the Chains, Inc. is a nonprofit organization. We're based out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. But we have also just opened up a resource center, which is called the Breaking the Chains, Inc. Community Resource Center, which is 2134 North 6th Street. You can contact us at 717-525-9448. We do mentoring. Like I said, we do counseling. We do substance abuse. I'm a substance abuse counselor. We do substance abuse counseling. We do, affordable housing. We, you know, job skills training, whatever you name, so that we can help cut down the recidivism rate. Because if this young man or young lady has a job when they're coming home or when they come home from prison, then you don't have to worry about them breaking in, whose house down the block or something, because they have a job or that, you know, they'll be doing what they're doing. But the main thing is these kids. We have to change these cycles and this recidivism with these children, because most of the time when the parent goes to prison, not all the time, but most of the time when the parent goes to children, when the parent goes to prison, the children begin to follow in their footsteps. We see it. I've been in prison where the father and the son share the same cell, but they could see nothing wrong with it. And we're not putting them down, because again, it goes back to education. We can only do better when we know better. And it goes back to voting. Do you know how many people in prison don't care about voting? Do you know how many people in prison think that voting is a joke? But we understand, us on the panel, we understand how important this voting thing is. So we have to continue. Just like you said, when they come home from prison, we have to, but before prison, that's why I said we talked to them about this during prison. You have to come home in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. You can be a convicted felon and still vote. So that's one of the states that, you know, you're still allowed to vote in. But other individuals, even though they have those rights, they still won't use them. So this is the part where if you don't remember anything else about me after this call, remember that I am a strong believer, and I am behind education 100% because we have to educate us. If we don't first change the way that we think, we can never change our actions. So in order to first break the physical chains, we have to break the spiritual, mental, and emotional chains of imprisonment. So again, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Stan for allowing me to come on to the show and the journey back. My journey back from years of imprisonment for when people, I'm going to say this and I'm not going to be too long. When I came home from prison, next year will be 7 years. This is the longest I've ever been out of prison. This is the most peaceful time of my life because I've changed my ways, I've changed my thoughts, I've changed my actions. But when I came home from prison, individuals had a bet. They bet a lot of money. These individuals bet a lot of money that within 6 months, I would be back out in the streets hustling and be locked back up because that's the type of life that I did. I told one of the individuals who told me about this later on, I don't gamble, I'm not a gambling man. I said, why didn't you tell me about that bet? He said, we could have got that money because I'm going back to prison for committing a crime. The only way I'm going back to prison is to help free some people, to help educate the people so that their children don't end up in those prisons that they're building down in Alabama. These are the things that we must do, breaking the chains. Breaking the chains wants to work with any individuals across this nation who is willing to help do the work that needs to be done to keep people from out of prison. So, again, I want to thank you, Stan. Any individuals that you know, would like to reach out, you can call me. My personal number is 717-623-5432, Dr. Kevin Dolphin. Again, or you can reach us at our Breaking the Chains Resource Center, and we would love to work with you guys.
Hey, Dr. Kevin, if I say the words flat top and B103, what you know about that?
Oh, man. those were the days, man.
Yeah,
Friday evening, Saturdays. I mean, man,
yeah.
Took me back on that one.
Yeah.
But those were the days. The world has changed now, man. The way that people are, the way that things are. You look at it, man. When you find a group of people such as you guys that's on the floor, where you guys are doing this out of the love, and you can feel it. I can feel it because this is my first time ever being on here. I mean, that's marvelous. It's just wonderful, man, and I applaud each and every one of you guys, man.
We appreciate you, brother. We're at the seven-minute mark. We're going to go around the horn real quick and get some final thoughts. Big Travis.
Really, all I can say is educationally informative, but I'm you know me, I still got to sit on that fence and wonder why what we everywhere. So, like I say, I appreciate you guys. A great show. As usual, I don't think I've ever ever gotten up here and said, ever. Stan, this is the worst show you've ever had. I don't think I've ever done that. So
I haven't
seen one. So all I can tell you guys is that I'll see you next week. And this was a great show, great topic. And I just wish that we could just magnify the solutions and get this stuff going. But that's pretty much it. So appreciate you guys.
All right, Izzy, final thoughts.
Well, Travis, I like you, man. I want to give you a dab and a hug, man. I'm right there with you. I'll be up on that fence right alongside you because I feel you 100%. I mean, the first thing I'll say is just a little self-promotion is please, anybody listening, if you like all the stuff we're talking about, go to The Crime Report. It's on Instagram. It's The Crime Report Media, The Crime Report on Facebook and Twitter. We are a comprehensive criminal justice news source. We are a nonprofit. And if you like everything we're talking about, we have experts, professionals on there all the time writing great articles that are very informative. So go on to that. I will say that I agree with John. I agree with everybody on the show, but I agree with John because all of these things need to be happening. The one thing that you'll see in major media in general in this country, it's very divisive. Everybody thinks it's all or nothing. We can only do one thing. There's lots of light switch, silver bullet conversations. We need to be doing all of these things, and we can do all of these things, and we have the money to do all of these things. And I think when we're talking about keeping people out of prisons, like I said before, we need to be focusing on keeping them out, like keeping them out at all. We need to start going after mandatory minimums. We have to start going after plea bargaining. Like Stan said, when you think about exoneration, I mean, I'll double down. A third of the exonerations that have happened in this country since 1983 have been for no crime conviction. That means people not only didn't get convicted of a crime that they didn't do, they got convicted of a crime that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as we have things like that going on, we're not going to solve anything. We need to do all of this. So you need to go after plea bargaining. We need to go after mandatory minimums. We need to have to go after the bail system. We've got to go after all of these things, and we can. And as I've always said, we have the money so that the defense budget keeps going up by about $20 billion every year.
All right, bro. Appreciate you. Dr. Behavior, final thoughts.
All right, two things. 10 out of the 11 children that sat in one of my circles in my alternative school classroom, 10 out of 11 had parents who were currently incarcerated. And that was my elementary school classroom circle. 10 out of 11. So this is an issue that is affecting us in so many ways. But I'll lead with my starfish story. I love the story of the starfish. The starfish need to be in the water to live. And starfish will wash upon the shores. And when you walk down the beach, there are thousands and thousands upon thousands of starfish that wash upon the shore. Two people are walking down the shoreline, and one starts picking them up, just throwing them as fast as he can, throwing them back into the ocean. And the other person says, why are you bothering? There's thousands of starfish that are going to die. You can't save them all. And you say, yeah, but it mattered to that one. And for me, I always go back to the starfish story. I can't save them all. But boy, it mattered to that one. So if you're out here fighting and if you're out here, you know, doing your part, God bless you. Please keep going because it did matter to that one, and you never know what that one is going to go on to do and to create. So God bless us all as we continue this fight.
All right. Appreciate it. Big Joe.
I thought you gave it to Dr. Cruz, but I agree with Dr. It matters to that one, but I'm in for the fight. So anybody got the team fight going, I'm in. But, oh, also, Ms. Ruby said, what's the crime report? Give your thing again, if people want to know.
It's the crimereport.org, and then you can, that's our website, and then you can find us on Instagram at the Crime Report Media, and then on Twitter and Facebook, it's the Crime Report.
I'll make sure she gets it. Appreciate that, Joe, because I can't see the Facebook today. I got to be on the iPad today. Big John, we got about a minute, brother. This was, you know, y'all bonded, so I'm going to let you take this out.
Well, I mean, I think this show, everybody bonded on. I never seen a show. There's been shows in the past where it seemed to be right up Joe's alley, right up Travis' alley, Dr. Corsi, Izzy. But this show stands out more so than any other show that I recall. And I think that it only goes to show that no matter what our differences of experiences are, when you bring brilliant minds, this to me was like the epic show. And I'm really left without words, man. And I just hope people take what they heard here today and reach out to Izzy and Brother Kev and whoever else, Father Travis. Yo, man, it's powerful. This was powerful.
I appreciate you, brother. With that, we're going to get ready to get out of here. I appreciate everybody on Facebook. Dr. Kev, appreciate you, brother.
God bless you guys, man. Continue to do that work. We need you.
Kev, we're going to link, Kev.
Yes, sir. Yep,
all
sir.
Right.
Yes, sir.
All right. And with that, we're out.
Later.
Behind the blue curtain, there is a lovely answer.